Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to 2 off the first. It's June 30th, 2023. I'm Ryan Ballengee. It's great to have you here with us. I haven't done a show in a couple of days. I was out in Indiana, southern Indiana, to be specific. I was playing in the Pro-Am for the Senior LPGA Championship, which started yesterday. Had, unfortunately, a weather issue yesterday that pushed play back, and I only got about not even half the round in. So they're going to wrap that up. They've already wrapped that up, getting into the second round today, and then they'll have a final round on Saturday. It's out Sultan's Run, which was a great golf course to play in a town called Jasper, Indiana, which is not too far from French Lick Resort, where I stayed. Love French Lick. Shout out to Brendan Sweeney and everybody at French Lick for making a great experience. Same with everybody at Sultan's Run and also with the Epson Tour and the Legends of the LPGA. They were fantastic. Really, really cool experience. We'll talk about that on the 19th Hole Golf Show, my weekly pod that's kind of more in-depth about all kinds of different things in golf. We are presented by our friends at Swannies Golf. Check them out at swannies.co, at swannies.co. You've seen me on the video versions of this show wear great polos, great hoodies. They have great t-shirts. I have a bunch of different t-shirts from them that are good, topical, fun golf t-shirts. Check them out at swannies.co and tell them I sent you. And we're going to talk a little bit about today on the what is happening with the LIV, PIF, DPWT PGA Tour deal. We'll talk a little bit about that. And then I want to talk about the Rory McIlroy, Sergio Garcia mending of fences in the second half of this. So let's start with where we are on the PGA Tour PIF thing. So I think this wound up happening just before I left for Indiana. And this was a leak from presumably someone on a Senate subcommittee that had invited Jay Monahan, the commissioner of the PGA Tour, Greg Norman, Yasser Al-Rumayyan, those folks who are basically the principals, and Keith Pelley, I think, was also invited, the principals behind the deal that has been announced, at least as a framework between those organizations. And they were invited by Senator Richard Blumenthal and Senator Ron Johnson, the Democrat and Republican chairs of that committee. A permanent subcommittee on investigations. They are not particularly happy about this and this arrangement, especially after the tour lobbied Washington very hard to go against the Saudis in the last year and invoked 9/11, asked for their help, and now is coming to them and saying, whoa, forget all that. We worked it all out. Everything's great. 9/11, no issue. We're fine to take the money now. Please don't get in our way. And Blumenthal, who has had his hands on some golf things over the years, including a venture called Back Nine Network, Ron Johnson, who is pretty skeptical of the Saudis, I would say, they got together and said, you know what, we want to trash you out in front of here. We're going to invite you to come. So they, the PGA Tour, PIF, and DPWT, now referred to moving forward as NewCo, because they haven't decided on what their actual name would be moving forward. It's kind of a placeholder. Bad placeholder, but a placeholder. They supplied the 6-page document to this Senate subcommittee, what the agreement says, what they have agreed to in the agreement. And it immediately got leaked to No Laying Up, who posted it. Kudos to them for being the first on it. Hey, if you have friends in lots of places, it's pretty easy to get a hold of stuff. And I think this was a green light special from the Senate subcommittee folks that were like, yeah, get it out there. Who cares? I don't care. And they wanted to get that out there to kind of send a message. Nothing you do is safe with us anymore because you have made us look like fools in trying to support you publicly. And we're not going to do it again. So the document's out there and read the document right away. The really interesting thing about it is there's not a whole lot said. It is as vague as the PGA Tour, LIV, the Saudis. Everyone thinks it is. Everyone says it is. It is quite vague. And much of it is not legally binding. Of a couple of pages that are, you know, signature page and stuff like that. So there's really like a 4-page document here. And in that 4-page document, the primary things that come out of this, and really the only legally enforceable things are, one, the lawsuits go away. Two, no one can disparage one another. And three, there cannot be a recruiting period for players one way or the other as long as this document is in force. Curiously enough, the document is no longer in force after December 31st, 2023. Now, the groups can agree to extend it. That would be a separate agreement technically, but they could agree to extend it. But basically everything else that they talked about, everything else that they said they would do in the press release, it's there. Everything that Jimmy Dunn said to Sports Illustrated trying to explain the deal is pretty accurate. I mean, if not completely accurate, really accurate. He wasn't kind of BSing it. It was what it was. The tour will have a permanent number of majority seats on the board. PIF can name who they would like to be a member of the board to chair it. That would be Al Ramayan, but could be someone else in the future someday. And there's no agreed to amount of investment. There's really no particular timeline to it. The PGA Tour basically has to quote-unquote work in good faith. Good faith is used a lot. It's a legal term. Basically means you're going to try, but you don't really have to try that hard to properly assess the value of LIV. Everyone gets an outside company to come in and assess the value of their assets. That combines together. Then you decide your ownership percentage based on that, and then you go from there. And then the Saudis can say, okay, here's what our percentage is based on our assets, which is LIV. And after that, we can kick in whatever amount we want and get to whatever percentage we would like. They're going to wind up, they have to be a minority. Pretty sure it said that in the document, but I may be incorrect on that, so I don't want to say that as fact. But the Saudis basically can say, okay, well, our percentage with LIV is, I don't know, 15%, 10%. I'm just making this up, right? And we would like to add another $2 billion to get our percentage to 30%, 25%, whatever it is, right? That's how it's going to work. And I've been involved in the negotiations of a similar deal in the past, and it can get kind of tricky, right? Trying to value assets and trying to do it independently and everyone agreeing what the ownership stakes are, all of that is difficult, even if you're friendly, because you think your assets have a certain value, and they do. But if the assets, the third party doing it, if you disagree with that, well, that's a whole other setback. Now you've got to get a second opinion, or you reach an impasse, and then you've got to come up with how you move forward from that. So there's a lot that would have to be done, and I'm sure it's still ongoing, but there's a lot that has to be done to reach a final agreement. And if you wanted, the way this document is structured, any side, could drag their feet, because you have an agreement between three parties, which means the three parties all have to sign off on it to reach a final agreement. Now, I didn't see any language in there that said two of the three parties could make their own agreement. So let's say, for example, the talks don't work out between the PGA Tour and the Saudis. There's nothing in the document that says one way or the other if the DP World Tour could say, well, we'll still sign something with the Saudis and the PGA Tour will continue to exist on its own and not be a part of this deal moving forward. We don't know that. I don't know if that... I did not see that as part of it. So it would have to be a separate thing. But that is possible. The way this is structured, it gives everyone outs. Everyone outs. The only things they have agreed to, truly agreed to, in this document, is that they're not going to sue each other anymore. that the Saudis continue their claim to sovereign immunity, and they're going to challenge that every step of the way if there are future lawsuits from other people or other situations, and that they're not going to recruit one another for the length of this document's enforced, and no disparagement. Those, I guess those are the four things, really. And at the end of the year, or whenever they agree this document is done, they don't have to do it anymore. It's kind of interesting. If you want to put your tinfoil hat on, you think, okay, well, everyone could just drag their feet here for 6 months, and we're done. And LIV could go on operating as its own business. The PGA Tour can just go back to doing what it does. But I don't think that's likely to happen. I don't even think that's a significant thing at this point. It's possible, for one. Two, I think regulatory bodies can make it more likely. Federal Trade Commission, DOJ, the Senate could really play with this and make it a show. They could have a lot of fun with this, as they would probably think. So there's all of those possibilities. And there's still a lot to figure that out. And then the important piece here that I think people need to know, there was a board meeting, a PGA Tour board meeting this week, Tuesday, in Detroit for the Rocket Mortgage Classic. Not everyone, I don't think, had to be there in person, but there's a policy board right on the tour. There's, I believe, 11 members? 9 members. I don't remember what the exact number. I'm pretty sure it's 11 members. And there are 5 players who are on that policy board. Patrick Cantlay, Rory McIlroy, Charlie Hoffman, Peter Malnati, and Webb Simpson. And they're having this policy board meeting. And there's some more details apparently available. Not tons. Oh, it was Tuesday. And the agreement that ultimately comes out of this has to be approved by the players. They're going to have a final vote on this because they're going to have these 5 players as part of it. And the folks who are the players who are on the policy board released a statement after this meeting that was on, I guess it was Tuesday. And the statement is interesting to read and says, quote, entering the framework agreement put an end to costly litigation. Management, with input from our player directors, has now begun a new phase of negotiations to determine if the tour can reach a definitive agreement that is in the best interests of our players, fans, sponsors, partners, and the game overall. If future negotiations lead to a proposed agreement, it would need approval by the tour's policy board, which includes player directors. In the meantime, we are all committed to the safeguards in the framework agreement that ensure the PGA Tour would lead and maintain control of this potential new commercial entity. And ultimately, there would be a board vote on this, right? The player representatives would have a say of it. But you need a united player front to make this go away if you wanted that to happen. Now, Cantlay, as a board member, has been subject of a commentary from Eamon Lynch from Golf Week. Got him a little bit of hot water, to be honest with you. He went after Patrick Cantlay. He went after Cantlay in saying that he believes Cantlay is trying to organize players to vote against whatever this deal is because they kind of want LIV to still exist, in the thinking that, at least as Eamon writes, that if LIV still exists, there's still leverage over the tour. The players who are not necessarily the mega stars, they may be talented, they might be great players, but they aren't the mega stars. They can still have leverage over the tour for getting more money, whether that's from purses, whether that's from bonus pools, what have you. Because if this agreement comes to fruition, you might get rid of the player impact program. You may change the structure of some bonus pools. You may change the structure of membership. All of those things are subject to change, right? And so I think Cantlay is afraid, at least in Eamon's telling of it, that this negotiation, this agreement, could take away any potential edge he has to make more money. And that's his ultimate concern. Well, a bunch of players, Adam Scott, Ricky Fowler, Justin Thomas, all kind of shared the same image, social media image, whether it was on Instagram or Twitter, going after Aemon, although not so explicitly, basically saying, you know, they didn't support the deal or they didn't support Aemon's column and they wanted that to kind of, you know, let it stand on its own. I'm not really sure how it all shakes out, but I think suffice to say, there are a lot of competing interests in here, and not just between the principal organizations, but within the organizations themselves. I mean, the LIV golfers really have no say in what goes on. Like, the public investment fund is going to decide what they want to do, and they're going to do it without the player input, frankly. Greg Norman doesn't matter, Phil doesn't matter, nobody else matters. It's just Yasser Al-Rumayyan, and presumably maybe MBS. And then, on the PGA Tour side, though, you've got a lot of players. Different groups. You've got superstars. You've got superstars who are charismatic. You've got superstars who are just good players. You've got also RANs. You've got former champions, aging players, people who flirted with LIV, people who didn't, all kinds of different groups. And they have different agendas. And it's going to be very hard to get them to all agree in the end unless it comes down to simply survival. And I don't know if it does or doesn't, but obviously the PGA Tour would feel like they really can use the Saudi money to help finance all of these massive purses, although I think much of that, frankly, is overblown because of the amount of money that the tour has through its rights deals, particularly with its domestic partners. It's huge. It's a tremendous amount of money, and it really does cover all of these increases. So I don't think that's a valid excuse, but nevertheless, you still need sponsors to stick around, and you need to craft a new schedule that will allow them to still feel satisfied and like they're getting value. So that, and then, I mean, that's them. There's that. There's the charitable. There is a lot. There are a lot of stakeholders on the PGA Tour, and to get them to agree without a tremendous amount of compromise, without taking the deal out of the hands of the public investment fund's interests, without losing a ton of sponsors. I mean, there's a lot that has to be considered here. That's why I don't think this moves quickly. But it is interesting that the agreement at least says what they told us it said, which, for better or for worse, means they get to it pretty quickly. The one last thing I will point out about all of this, then we can move on to Rory McIlroy and Sergio Garcia. But the interesting thing to me about this is that there's a paragraph in the document that says the three organizations, will come together and issue press release about this agreement 7 days from its execution, which was May 30. Well, they basically waited until the absolute last second to do that. So, is there an intent to drag their feet? Is there an intent to make it look bad? Because I would argue that the rollout was not good at all, that there wasn't much information. It wasn't well described by Monahan. The interview that Monahan gave to Golf Channel was a disaster. The one on CNBC wasn't awful, but it was strange, obviously, given the context. So could they have done it better? Did they not do a good job on purpose? I mean, again, if you want to put your tinfoil hat on here, you could read a lot into the way it has been done. And meanwhile, Jay Monahan is not in the functioning role of commissioner right now. He is, quote, in a medical situation at the moment, and he is not acting as the day-to-day commissioner of the PGA Tour. So what does that look like? There's all this assumption that he's going to come back to work, but I feel like I've heard multiple people who hear all the scuttlebutt. I don't hear it as much as I used to, but who are all the scuttlebutt about the PGA Tour, say that they think there's a very reasonable chance he never comes back. And I don't know why you would say that unless you were skeptical about the reason he was out in the first place. So we'll leave it there, see what happens next. But there's still a lot going on. And we talked in the last show about why it doesn't seem like there's anything going on. Because whatever's happening, I think is going to move extremely slowly. And I think we have a better idea now in these last couple of days of why it's moving so slowly and what that could portend for this deal moving forward. All right, let's talk about Rory McIlroy and Sergio Garcia. I thought this was interesting. Sergio Garcia and Rory have been at odds since the whole LIV thing. They have not had not really spoken a whole lot, but it is interesting that it seems like McElroy and Garcia are back on good terms. And I think McElroy is a guy who's pretty quick to forgive people. Garcia is an interesting guy. I've had some interactions with him, interviewed him, talked to him a bunch of times. He's a very interesting guy because he's really affable. He's really easy to get along with. And then he does the stuff that he does on the course and says some of the kind of pithy things that he says from time to time, whiny things or bitter things. And it makes him sound awful. He's very much a yin-yang kind of guy. He's two very different people at times. But it appears that they're okay. They're on good terms. Ahead of the live event this week at Valderrama, which Garcia helped architect, he said he had, quote, gained a friend back. And apparently, according to 10 Golf, which is a Spanish outlet, 2 weeks ago, Garcia had sent a text to McElroy hoping to work things out. And apparently, according to Irish Golf Desk, Brian Keogh, who's great, as Garcia was finishing up on 18 on Sunday at LACC in the US Open, McElroy was on the first tee and, according to Keogh, appeared to make the call me gesture, which, again, in the 21st century, we don't do it that way anymore. But anyway, the call me gesture to Garcia. And apparently that conversation happened. Garcia spoke ahead of the LIV Golf event, as I mentioned, went into a little bit more depth about it without necessarily mentioning McElroy explicitly, but said, quote, the US Open, it was a great event for me. I feel like I played well, but more than anything, because I gained a friend back, a friend that I kind of felt like I lost in the last year or so. We talked, we had a great conversation. I feel like I have that friend back, and that means, to me, means a lot. That's a very positive thing, end quote. McElroy was in Garcia's wedding when Garcia went to live, and obviously McElroy was very much an ardent defender of the tour. Garcia was not so much. And then McElroy said last year at the U.S. Open, or the Friday of the U.S. Open, McElroy said that he had woken to a text from Garcia, quote, basically telling me to shut up about Liv, blah, blah, blah. Said at the time, I was pretty offended and sent him back a couple of daggers, and that was it. And then Garcia threw out a barb to McElroy saying he, quote, lacked maturity. And I think at this point, there's so much up in the air. I think McElroy is going to be in a very interesting position moving forward because he was such a defender of the tour. And now he finds himself in this role, no-win situation, right? He's a player director. He's on the policy board. He has to figure this thing out, which has been negotiated without his involvement, without his direct input. And now he's got to figure out what to do next. Does he make peace with everything? Because that's what's going to happen as a result of this deal. He's going to have to do that, repair some relationships. And the same thing's going to happen to go the other way, by the way. And if there is an agreement, how will the LIV players who resigned their DP World Tour membership, will they ever be welcomed back to the Ryder Cup in the same way? Because now this new company would own a significant chunk of the Ryder Cup, which I am sure the PGA of America, which owns 50% of it, the U.S. portion, they're not happy about. So there's a whole lot going on here. This is just one example, and I wanted to point it out, not to spend a whole ton of time on it, but just to point it out that this is one of those many examples of things that are weird right now because of how things have changed so quickly. And what it would look like. Now, Keith Pelley has said about the Ryder Cup, he thinks it's, quote, difficult and highly unlikely that any of those players who resigned their membership could get reinstated and join the Ryder Cup team for this go-around in Italy. But what will that look like in 25? You would presume if this comes together, then everyone's back in. Everyone's back in the pool. What is that? I don't know what that looks like, but that's just one example that I wanted to point out of many awkward things that are probably happening behind the scenes or about to happen because of everything that happened on June 6th. And we'll see moving forward what it all shakes out to be, but safe to say things are going to get a little weird for a while. All right, that's going to do it for us on 2 of the First. Thanks for listening to the show. If you catch us on a podcast platform and let you do it, please leave us a 5-star review. Helps us reach more people. If you watch on the video version and you're listening on the audio as well, we appreciate it. Please consider subscribing to our YouTube channel and check us out on Golf News Net Radio, where you can listen to our 24/7 stream of golf talk, including 40 shows from around the world. That's on iHeart. And for our international friends, it's available on TuneIn. We'll be back next week with more shows. I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about. We've got plenty in action this week. We've got the Rocket Mortgage Classic, U.S. Senior Open. Next week, we've got the Women's Open at Pebble Beach for the first time. Lots and lots to get through. Never a shortage of content for this show. Thank you for your support. I appreciate it. We'll be back next time. Have a great weekend. See you on Monday.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.